Welcome to the Talent Smart Podcast. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who will offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We want to explore how technology and business can improve and enhance the world. We're always keen to hear from you and let us know what topics you'd like to hear us cover in future episodes. Also, if you'd like to take part, please let us know. We're always looking for interesting and inspiring people to interview. Speak soon. So I want to recap on Gardeners Not Mechanics, and from the last episode we started to dive in a bit in terms of machines versus ecosystem, and again be more like a gardener. So I just want to just recap a little bit in terms of a machine versus an ecosystem. So have you got examples of a company when they're acting like a machine versus a company who're acting like an ecosystem? Or is it about the people? I just want to just, if I'm looking at a company, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of investing or something like that. How do I judge whether they're ecosystem or a machine? Is there a way of doing it?
I think if it's a company that's got lots of big projects, and you go and read their annual report, and they're saying what they're going to be, you know, where they're going to be in 2 years and where they're going to be in 3 years, and all these things are kind of off in the distance. Then they're probably behaving like a machine. They've probably got big bet projects. Yep. On outcomes. Let's think about organizations that think like ecosystems. I'll name a couple. Google,
right?
Facebook, Twitter, any of the big tech giants. They're delivering regular value.
Right.
You don't hear Twitter go away, or let's say Google, you know, the next version of this will be coming out in 18 months time, and it'd be great, and you won't hear anything from us for 18 months.
Right.
You know, they've made famous what's called A/B testing, split testing. You do two things at the same time. This is what a gardener does, is you plant two things in the same place and see which one grows best. Right. Or you'll plant the same thing in two different places or more and see which one grows best. That's thinking like a gardener. Other organizations where you say you read their annual report and they'll say in 2 years' time or in 3 years' time, they're thinking like mechanics. They've got projects that think that the world is predictable. And I come from a lot of that environment in banking and financial markets. Yep. And a lot of those organizations behave like mechanics.
And what about for, let's say, smaller organizations, those that are not Google? Because just to relate as to, I guess, if I want to move into sort of practical exercises. So for those who are watching and listening to this, if they want to move more to being like a gardener, what are the practical things they can do differently, or what are the practical things they can assess themselves against? Let's start with the assessment. How am I going to assess my own organization and say, or my own team, my own leadership skills, and say, am I being gardener or mechanic in my approach? Any tips there?
Well, the first thing I would say is, can you draw your ecosystem? Okay. And can you draw how emotion and value flows through your ecosystem? And I've done videos on this, and we can share links on that. Great. Phil, which is how do you draw an ecosystem? It's very easy to do, by the way. It's just drawing arrows and labeling them, nothing more than that. There are no standards around it. It's just thinking out loud as a collaboration. Because two things about being able to draw your ecosystem, which is, if you don't know what your ecosystem looks like, there's a great lesson here from Darwin, you know, survival of the fittest, right? When Darwin said survival of the fittest, he meant what fits the ecosystem best. He didn't mean the strongest, the tallest, the fastest. He meant what fits best. So often what people do is, when they're thinking about change to organizations, or even change to their own lives. I don't know who's in the Phil Phantom ecosystem. I know a fair few of them, but there's an ecosystem there, right? If you want to introduce a change into that, you've got to think about, or you can think about, who else is involved, and what does the value flow from each of those individuals? Or you can just draw arrows between them, showing them. And what most people do is when they want to make a change is they go off, they design the change, and then they say, they don't think of it in these terms, but they say, in effect, they say, now, how am I going to shoehorn this into my ecosystem?
Right.
Now, if you want to, now, if you're going to shoehorn something into your ecosystem, it's good that you understand the ecosystem first, because one of the things about ecosystems I forgot to say in the previous segment was that you get unexpected side effects.
Yep.
In ecosystems. Okay. What makes them unpredictable. So rather than design a change and then try and shoehorn it into the ecosystem, better to say, when you're designing a change, how well will that fit within my ecosystem? Right. What's going to prosper best in this ecosystem, given the people, the organizations, the groups that are within it, and the value that they currently get? And it might not be the answer that's optimal to somebody that looks at it like a mechanic.
Right.
Now I used to be here because, you know, back in the mid 90s, I thought that everything had a right answer, and everybody that didn't agree with that could go to hell. You know, here's the right answer. I'm going to tell you the one and only truth. But if the people that are affected by a change and the people that are affecting a change, they're key to the success of change, to making lasting change. I say it's not that difficult to bludgeon through short-term change. But then, like a rubber band, it comes back again. And I think just in practical terms, if people are worrying about, oh, I don't know how to draw an ecosystem, just stop for a moment. We'll pause for a moment and say, right, so here's an exercise. Here's an exercise for you, the person that's watching, Phil, you sitting there. Okay. You don't have to do anything or say anything, right? So we're just going to pause for a moment and say, think of a change. Think of a change that you would make you'd like to make at work or in your life.
Okay.
Now, think, what would it mean to cultivate that change?
Right.
So I list in the book 9 elements of gardening, and I should be able to read them off the top of my head, but I've written them down just in case I forget. So this is the practical thing. So the first thing is to think like a gardener. So if you were going to cultivate, what would that mean? But just in case that is a bit too abstract, here are some sub analogies that you can think while thinking that through. Say, what does it mean to plan like a gardener? What would a plan look like for your change? Now, this is the only one where I give a bit of direction, because it's best work with analogies and metaphors that people run for them, that they work for themselves.
Yes.
And they're not said, this is how you should think about it. It's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm not trying to say, this is how you should think like a gardener. I'm saying, here's an analogy, which is thinking like a gardener. And I'm saying, here are some sub-analogies. So what does plan mean? I'll make an exception there, because I think that in an uncertain world, planning is about purpose and vision.
Yes.
It's not about scheduling. It's about what is the true north, and how do people on a project or a change make decisions without referring up? Is it consistent with the true north of this project? And I think that comes out of purpose, and it comes out of vision. And when I say vision, I don't mean a pithy statement.
I mean
a rich picture, an advert, a television advert of what the world would look like. And then we get into make of these what you will, dear listener, which is, what would it mean to prepare the soil?
Okay.
What would it mean to plant well?
Okay.
What would pruning be?
Don't
answer out loud, Phil. It's all right. don't be tempted in, because we don't want to influence anybody else.
Right.
What would weeding be? Bear in mind, a weed is just a plant in the wrong place. There's nothing wrong with weeds. They're just plants in the wrong place. how do you water your garden? Or your change? I should be saying, thinking your change after this. I hope you think about that. What does it mean to stake? And stake, I'll give a little bit of help here. Say, staking is normally about supporting and constraining.
Yep.
How do you ensure good health and prevent pests and diseases? How are you going to enjoy your harvest? So there's not much work to do there. It all sounds a bit, I'm worried it sounds abstract, but it's really just, it's as simple as saying, right, in my, I want to make this change. Now, what does it mean to prepare the soil? I mean, I remember once I worked at a consultancy and I thought I was really good in those days. I'm wiser now. And I thought I should be promoted to the next level. And the first year I didn't get promoted. And then the next year I was absolutely horrified when I didn't get promoted. And what I discovered afterwards was the way that the promotions were made was essentially the level above you sat around a series of tables and they ranked everybody and they said who got promoted and who didn't get promoted. So I didn't figure out, first of all, who would be sitting around the table. I didn't prepare the soil in terms of talking to any of those people to see if they supported me, and if they didn't support me, why they didn't support me. And in the end, after three years, I left a really great firm because I knew, I at the time I thought I wasn't going to get any further. So for me, preparing the soil in that case was figuring out, if you will, who the stakeholders were.
Yeah.
Having honest conversations before I got there. And one of the things I learned about that was really interesting, which is if you go to somebody and you say, this is what I want to achieve, often you don't do it because you're afraid they're going to laugh at you, which is completely ridiculous. If you go, what actually happens? If somebody comes to you, you feel phantom or me, Gary Lloyd, and says, I'd like to get here. You don't laugh at them, do you? You go, well, that's very interesting. Tell me about where you are at the moment. And then you talk about the gap from where they are
to where they want to get to.
To where they want to get to. So you go to somebody and say, I would like to get from here to there. What would I have to do to get there? What would I have to do to get ready? Now, at that point, if that person answers, and they will 99 times out of 100, you've enlisted them in that project because they're now going to give you some advice, which if you take it, you've got every reason you can go back to them in future, check that you're on track.
Yep.
Check that you're ready. Now, one of my sidelines is for the last 12 years, I've been a mentor for Warwick Business School. And I was mentoring somebody in a manufacturing company who wanted to get on the board of that company. And I used that experience of acting like a mechanic, expecting that my track record would speak for itself.
Yes.
And he said he wanted to get on the board. And I said, have you had a conversation with the CEO about it? And he said, no, he might laugh at me. And that would I want to be. I said, well, you have to put your aspiration on the table, make him aware that you're that ambitious, and then ask him this question: how do I get from where I am to being on the board? What do I need to achieve, and how can we do that in an objective way? And so he kind of reluctantly agreed that that was kind of a good idea, but really wanted to start with the head of HR. And I said, do you think that it's the head of HR who decides who goes on the board? And the answer was no. Who else is going to be a key decision maker on whether you get on the board or not? Grumble, grumble, CFO. Everybody's terrified of the CFO. Everybody's always terrified of the CFO. Even the CEO is always terrified of the COO. Because the CEO never likes to go against the advice of the CFO.
Until you get sacked.
Because that will look bad down the road. Something goes wrong, the CFO is advised against it, then you're on dicey ground. So they're like the often the most terrifying person in the organization. So he acknowledged that the CEO, CFO would have a great influence on whether he got on the board or not. So I said, well, then they should be the first person you go and talk to. And he was really, and his arms folded, and he's, you know, he sat back, and he was really worried about it. And I said, you know, it's like a project. In a project, all too often, people put off the big risks until the end.
Right.
You know, you should hit the big risks first, because your whole project is dependent on them. You know, the business case assumptions are the ones that you should tackle first, not last. And by the way, as I said in the last segment, as cheaply and as quickly as possible. And so then I saw him again in a couple of months' time. He'd spoken to the CFO, he'd spoken to the CEO, and the CFO had volunteered to mentor him, to help him to achieve his goal. Now, at that point, anybody that's ever sat on a board will know, if you've got the CFO, then the rest of the dominoes are going to fall pretty much into place. So that was one way, just one way that people might think about what does it mean to prepare the soil. You have to think through the analogy. In this case, the soil were the senior board members.
And it's that whole thing of understanding where you are. I like that, and preparing. So if you want to go from here to there, how are you going to do that? And it's in a personal change point of view. And I deal with this obviously a lot with recruitment and talent management. People want to change their careers, want to change their lives. And often it's first off, as you say, preparing the ground, preparing the soil to actually look at and go, well, here you are today. How are you going to make these steps? And then I know further on into your, you know, analogies about what's the impact going to be? What are the constraints? What support do you need, et cetera? So there's a, you know, a lot to be said for it in terms of personal change. And then that flows down into business, if you're running a business too.
I think a large part of that, this is where you asked me in the previous segment, where the book came from. I'm such a firm believer in co-creation of things. Yeah. Great visions, whether it's Steve Jobs or Akio Morita at Sony, don't pop out of thin air. They're created with a group of people. Yeah. They're a shared purpose and a shared vision. And people are often asking, how do you overcome resistance to change? Well, you don't get that much resistance if you actually involve the people affected by the change in creating it in the first place.
Yeah.
That's the best way of overcoming resistance to change, is not to create it in the first place.
And in terms of people watching this and they're maybe running teams or running projects or running a company, how do they look at themselves inwardly and decide if they're currently acting as a mechanic or currently acting as a gardener? Is there a quick 3-step test or a quick one question to ask themselves and say, am I being gardener or mechanic today?
Look at your organization or your project or your change.
Right.
And write down the 3 key assumptions that it's dependent upon.
Right.
Now, ask yourself, when and how am I going to test those?
Okay.
And if the answer is, I have no idea, or I'm going to test them by doing this and it's in the relatively near future, then you're acting like a gardener. If you're not going to know until 2 years, 3 years time, then you're acting like a mechanic.
Right. So it's dealing with that unpredictability.
It's kind of a proxy test, yeah, because it depends on, you know, if you're, as you were about to say before I rudely interrupted you, that if you have a schedule, a plan, which is fluid and responds to unpredictability, it expects that you've embraced unpredictability rather than trying to control unpredictability, then you're behaving like a good chance you're behaving like a gardener. But, you know, I've seen people back. I've spent, you know, 2 days in a basement conference room while people thrash out a plan for a project with loads of people in there. And you know that people walking outside, as soon as they walk outside the door, know that the plan is rubbish. It's been produced for a reason, which is to satisfy someone senior, to pretend that the world is more predictable than it really is. And this is kind of like a shared delusion that's often shared between senior management and more junior management and the people on the ground. Everybody knows that the world's not predictable, yet we go off and create these plans. If you're using Microsoft Project, there's a fair chance that you're assuming that the world is predictable.
Brilliant. Well, Gary, look, it's been an absolute delight over these last two episodes. I guess if there was one thing I'd like to leave people with, what's your one tip? What's your gold nugget you want to leave people with in terms of other than buy your book, and obviously we'll check out your website for more hints, tips, and advice. But like, what's the one thing to say to people in terms of they're maybe questioning their project and their people and their what next for me? What's your sort of key tip?
I think my key tip is to get your team around you. Get a big sheet of paper and say, okay, let's talk about the ecosystem. Let's just do the people. Let's start with the individuals, groups, and organizations such that this thing we're working on together delivers value. And let's draw some arrows between them about how they interact. And if you can, put a label on the arrow and says what's going from one place to the other, because that's how the brain works. The brain works through connections.
Yeah.
It doesn't work through lists. And surprising stuff comes out. And put that up on the wall and then get people to wander past and annotate it, chat to you about it. That would be my number one piece of advice.
Brilliant. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time.
Pleasure.
And speak with us, and I hope we get the chance to do it again very shortly.
Thanks, Phil.
Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the Talent Smart podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We're always keen to hear your feedback. Please let us know your thoughts and what episodes and what topics you'd like to hear us cover in the future. Our intention in each episode is to interview interesting and inspiring people who offer their insights into their areas of expertise. We're keen to hear from you. Please let us know your thoughts and if you'd like to take part in future episodes.